Thank you very much for the kind invitation. It's very nice to be here. So I have to see whether I manage to. Now, how does this work here? Oh. Yeah, it's not the arrow keys which work, it's something else. Okay. Kirill asked me to say something about what we are talking about, because he told me that he will not do that. I will give a status report about the G-2 of the muon, discuss the news on standard model predictions, the evaluation of the hadronic contribution, and if I have time, I will discuss a little bit this problem with tau versus E plus E minus data, and then give a short outlook. So the leptons, they have a magnetic moment, as we know, and this quantity we are talking about is given by this very simple matrix element for Q squared equal to zero. This is the Dirac, this is the Pauli form factor at Q squared equals zero. This is just the anomalous magnetic moment, so everybody knows what he has to calculate in order to make a prediction of this quantity. The very nice thing is that this is responsible for the Larmor precession of the muons moving in a magnetic field, and for a certain specifics, the so-called magic energy, this formula gives you the direct proportionality to the magnetic field. So if you know the magnetic field very, very precisely, you directly can read off the anomalous magnetic moment. And that's why you can measure this quantity so well. So AL for any lepton is a dimensionless quantity, just a number. It must vanish at the tree level in any renormalizable theory, so it is a finite prediction. In any renormalizable theory, you get a unique prediction for this number. It is testing the helicity flip amplitude, and it's one of the most precisely measured electroweak observables. At lowest order in QED or standard model, AL is universal. As you know, this has been calculated a very long time ago. And actually, the situation is this, that in principle, this allows you to get the most precise determination of the Feinstruction constant from the anomalous magnetic moment of the electron. The muon is very much interesting because it has an enhanced sensitivity to new physics. The magnetic moment scales with the new physics scale in this way, so in the ratio, if you compare the two quantities, you get a factor 40,000 more sensitivity to new physics than in the electron magnetic moment. So even so, A mu is 143 times less precisely measured. You still have a factor 280 more in sensitivity to new physics in this quantity. This is why it is so interesting. There are interesting mass effects. It's very interesting what is the sensitivity to heavy masses, for instance, or to light masses. In a heavy mass, in such a diagram, gives this kind of power correction, so eventually you get absolutely tiny second order corrections of this type. Then, by the way, this is what leads to a non-universal behavior in higher order, starting from the second order. Then you have light internal masses. If you have, for instance, the muon here and the electron in here, you get large logarithms, which also violate the universality. Just very briefly, at the two-loop level, you have seven universal diagrams for a common fermion, for common fermion lines, which is given by this simple expression. Was calculated very long time ago. This was calculated in 96 by Laporta, in MITI analytically, also a very simple formula. Then the four loops, here you have 891 diagrams of this universal type which contribute to any of the anomalous magnetic moments, Kinoshita 99, and also a new paper came out this year. They found an error in this coefficient, this change by 0.24, and actually gives, if you deduce the fine structure constant from this quantity, it gives a 1.6 sigma shift. For a long time it was believed that not much can happen in the electro, in the pure QED part, but I mean a large amount of these calculations have just been done by one group, and of course this is always a difficult situation. Here you see that in the electron anomalous magnetic moment you have two so to say non-universal terms, from the vacuum polarization, from higher order vacuum polarization, from light by light loop with a muon, and from the tau vacuum polarization. The hadronic corrections is very tiny, weak corrections, absolutely tiny. So it is not sensitive to any of these new physics things because it's suppressed by ME over MU squared, and therefore this is in principle a very good observable to extract the fine structure constant. If you take the corrected value, this is what you get. For some reason, Kinoshita himself does not give a value, and he announced to publish an update soon. So I do not exactly know what it means, whether one should not use this number yet. So now the anomalous magnetic moment of the muon has a long history. It's one of the most precise tests of quantum field theory on the non-trivial structural interesting level. The old result was determined in 77 at CERN, and this was the value at that time. Here, then, there are the ongoing experiments now at Brookhaven. This is the new value for the mu minus we were so much waiting for. You see, it is very, very well compatible with CPT. I mean, it has a completely different systematics. It is highly non-trivial that you get here the same number, in my opinion. And this is a really very, very interesting result. And if you, it justifies assuming CPT. It means you can really take an average, and this is then the new value. These are previous values from Brookhaven in 98, 01 and 02, earlier measurements. They all agree very well. So the present status is the following. This is from the G-2 collaboration. So this is the mu plus, the mu minus. This is the average. This is the theory if you calculate the hadronic contributions from E plus E minus data. This is when you use tau data. Correspondingly, you have a 2.7 sigma deviation in this case and a 1.4 sigma deviation in case you believe more in the tau data. I will come to that later. So we have we have extremely high precision now. You see that experimental precision is substantially better now than the theory. And the Brookhaven design, by the way, was this one. as I said, this is very, very interesting to look for new physics. For instance, in a simplified, if you take some simplifying assumptions on the SUSY correction, then you can parameterize it in, for instance, in this way, where M is the lightest SUSY particle, and then from trying to fit this deviation by a SUSY contribution, of course you get some, for assuming some value of tangent theta, you get a bound to the mass. This, by the way, was discussed a little bit more in detail by Sven Heinemeier. They did here, this is a very interesting two-loop, partial two-loop calculation, and they find out that at most about one sigma change can be expected in the theoretical prediction for the allowed SUSY parameter space. Now the QED contribution now to the theory. The large part, of course, is the QED contribution, which has been calculated or estimated to 5 loops. This is the situation before at the beginning of this year, and this was the so-called standard QED contribution. This is a remark from my previous talk before the last paper by Kinoshita, where it says that it's unlikely that you can change anything here within this error goal. But then, unfortunately, nobody is really working on this QED contribution except Kinoshita himself. He started, apparently as a good collaborator, and he reconfigured the whole game, and he found in the for loop, in the alpha to the for contribution changes. It amounts to some 20 times 10 to the minus 1, which is half of a sigma of the final precision attempted by the Brookhaven experiment. And this is the change by doing some new numerical analysis of these diagrams. And who knows if somebody really reconsiders the whole thing. You can never be 100% sure. Even the effects are expected to be small. So then alpha QED, the new one, the value which I will use in my analysis is given by this. By the way, these errors here, they are dominated by the errors in the masses, because there are logarithms of big mass ratios, and the masses have experimental errors, and these errors are responsible here for the here. They are responsible for these errors. This is, of course, the errors from the numerical program, mainly. So you can see, if you look, if you plug in alpha, then you see that this converges very well, in spite of the fact that the coefficients in the expansion seems to grow quite fast. But the alpha is small enough that you get a nicely convergent thing. Then there are the weak contributions. I do the easiest things first. The weak contributions have been calculated long time ago. This is a DC standard model diagrams. It's a simple analytic expression. Everybody probably has seen. The Higgs contribution is very tiny, and there's absolutely no sensitivity to the Higgs. Then it was observed first by a Russian group here that there are potentially large terms, large logarithms can come in. And they did a partial calculation, namely they calculated these diagrams just for the leptons. And of course, you have here triangle anomaly, and you know there have to be cancellations between leptons and quarks, and these cancellations also take place for part of these logs. Therefore, the numerical result they got was completely unreliable. It was then first changed by the Marseille group, and later by Czernetzky, Kraus, and Marciano. They obtained the full result for this kind of class of diagrams. There was a recent improvement. There was a new calculation by the Marseille group, which agrees quite well with a new calculation by Czernetzky, Marciano, and Weinstein from 2 years ago. They estimated here also the uncertainties from Higgs stop and three loop diagrams. They have an additional error here, which I also take into account. Now the the main problem, as you know, are the hadronic contributions. This is, of course, a general problem to electroweak physics. the contributions from low-energy hadrons cannot be calculated perturbatively, while for leptons you can apply very nicely perturbation theory, for instance, to calculate these kind of objects. Here, when you have quarks, the quarks have strong interactions. There are all kinds of gluons, and the gluons are, are at low Q square. We are calculating a quantity at zero momentum, as you know. So a perturbative QCD cannot be used. I will actually show you how to calculate such diagrams. Actually, one can calculate them to all orders. There are three different types. Of course, one uses data. That's the way to do it. There are three types of problems. There is the hadronic vacuum polarization, and the main effect is gamma-gamma here, the photon vacuum polarization. In higher order also from Mr. Z, you get here hadronic contributions. Then you have here the hadronic light by light scattering diagram. We will hear about this in the next talk. Then there are these kind of diagrams here, where I, as I already said, there is the quark-lepton duality plays an important role here. There are these kind of two-loop effects. And of course, the quark loops in principle have to be replaced by hadronic blobs, which we do not really precisely know how to handle. Now, the evaluation of the hadronic contribution to the leading hadronic contribution is given by this vacuum polarization diagrams. When the vacuum fluctuation produce light hadrons, then you cannot, this means pion pairs and stuff like that. You cannot calculate that by perturbation theory, but there is a dispersion relation, as you know. The imaginary part of this is given by the production of, by the disintegration of the photon into hadrons in E plus E minus annihilation. You produce a photon which disintegrates into hadronic states. You measure that cross section, you plug it in here, and then you get the value for this. So that's how you calculate this to all orders. Of course, experimental data have errors, and therefore you get an error in the prediction of this quantity. For the perturbative tail at high energies, because of asymptotic freedom, you can safely calculate this in perturbation theory. This is the most recent, the most important data, because you have a 1 over energy to the 4 enhancement of load energy data. You get a tremendous, you get something like 75% just from this region here. So this is the region which you have to know best. Well, 67%, yeah, the error. 67% of the error is coming from the region just below the phi, just in this region here. So this is what you see here. The raw region contributes a very large part to the G minus 2. This is the error. The gray shaded line here is the error. This is coming from the J psi region and so on. So if you do this integral and use here perturbation theory, this is what you get from using the E plus E minus data. This is a collection of results which have been obtained. I only show the results which use the present accepted data set with all the corrections which have been done now. And you see that the results agree pretty well. Except for when you use the tau data, you get a substantial higher value for the contribution to G minus 2. This is a combined estimate by Troncic and Indurain. This is Davier Heidelmann. This is from a Russian group from Proplino, Hakiwara. This is my estimate here. This is the Davier Höcker Heidelmann estimate from E plus E minus data alone. So this is, you see, we have pretty good agreement. I mean, some people rely more on perturbation theory. They get somewhat smaller errors. This depends on how much you replace data by perturbative QCD. Then there are higher order contributions, for instance, insertions of a hadronic blob with a lepton loop, or a hadronic blob with a photon or double. This group got a slightly different value for this diagram as compared to the traditional Krause estimate. But this is insignificant change. Then more controversial and more interesting is the hadronic light by light. This is also evaluation by Niefeler after they have found the sign change, Knecht and Niefeler. And there is a new paper which we will hear in the next talk about. They get a much larger value here with substantially reduced error. This is a shift by in units of four. Well, this is one sigma. It's essentially a one sigma shift. These are the kind of problems. Here you have the pion exchange. This gives a very large contribution here. Then you have pion loops. These are the short distance, the long distance terms which are evaluated in a low energy effective theory, like extended Nambu-Yonalasinio model or something like that. And then you have for the high energy tail short distance contribution, and you have to combine these things. This is a tricky business, and you will hear certainly much more in the next talk about that. We do not really have a safe way to calculate this quantum. You have to rely on certain assumptions, right? Okay, so this is the summary. This was the old CERN experiment. This was the theory at that time. This was the theory much later, but in 85, long before the Brookhaven experiment started. These are the Brookhaven measurements we have now available. This is now the world average. This is the goal in the error. The 40, 10 to the minus 11, I don't know whether they will do it yet. Maybe not. Maybe it will not change very much. But, okay. And then here you have the theoretical predictions. You see, if you would assume the tau data, you get almost only 1.2 sigma, quite good agreement with the theory. Here you get 2.6 sigma deviation, 2.5 sigma. If you do rely more on perturbative QCD and get smaller errors, your sigma goes up very easily. This is the type and size of contribution. So you have all kind of contributions here. You see, this is QED, then this is the hadronic one loop, hadronic two loop, one loop electroweak, two loop electroweak. This was the old light by light, then it changed sign, new light by light. This is the discrepancy between tau and E plus E minus. And you see that there is all kind, in comparison with the experimental error, all these effects have to come together in a... It's absolutely fantastic to make a prediction at all with all these kind of different effects going into different directions, and at the end you get a number. So now let me come to this problem with. So we should know what is the right answer. Is it the tau people, of course, claim we can do much better measurements. There are much more modern measurements. Novosibirsk, there was for a long time only the Novosibirsk measurements. They have changed twice the corrections and republished the data, you know. So can you trust in that and things like that? It would be very good to have a cross check. If you could use the tau data, these two diagrams. If you just, this is this, you can take off, this is known. You take off, and what is left is this, and this is related by an isospin rotation. And therefore, you get from the tau spectral function directly, you can calculate, but only the isovector part you can calculate from this. This was a pioneering attempt by Alemannia W. Höcker in 69. They enhanced the E plus E minus data by the tau data set and assumed conserved vector current. This improved very substantially the pi-pi channel, which is dominating. The isovector part is 75%. The isoscalar part, which you cannot get from the tau data, is 25%. And at that time, they could reduce dramatically the error, for instance, in the delta R mu. Not so much in the, it has not so much impact in the evaluation of alpha. So this is how the tau data look like. You see there is a very good agreement between Aleph and Cleo, if you look more closely, but Opal is the other lab experiment is not so nice in agreement. Also, it must be also a sign that this is not a trivial measurement is the fact that Delphi and Alcery never measured this quantity. Nobody can tell me that this is a completely trivial measurement. So there may also be experimental problems here with radiative corrections and all that stuff. You know. So what we did, you have to first you have to subtract the omega, then you get the from the raw line shape you get the isovector one. Form factor, pion form factor, and then you can fit the mass and the width. You get a mass and a width, and this is agreement with this is our fit with Chef van Gossi, and this is agreement with Stavier's fit. And it is very important to really compare the same things. Then you have to do isospin corrections. By the Vienna group, for instance, there are all these isospin corrections which you can do. It has little impact, for instance, on the Aleph data. This is the isospin correction factor. After that, you have done that, you can fit a mass and a width from this. In both cases, the isovector part is fitted by exactly the same formula. Only the parameters differ. And if you assume in first place that the background is fixed, then it means that only the mass and the width of the row play a role. The reason for this big discrepancy in the data is that above, so this is one here, this is one, this is 10% discrepancy, and you see you can even get 20 or 30% discrepancy. In the relation between E plus minus and tau data. And they have, I showed you the Opal data you can forget. I could discuss that, but there is no time to do that. So you have to take the Aleph and the Opal. You see, there is a certain structure there. And you are looking for isospin breaking. And you have a 10% effect. The isospin breaking is electromagnetic corrections, or it's mu minus md. Very tiny effects. How do you get the 10% effect from isospin breaking? The reason is very simple. At the rest, because you have a sharp resonance, if you shift the raw mass by 0.5%, you in fact get easily a 10% effect in the tail. It's just kinematically enhanced. And so what we did, we tried to fit this ratio to one, keeping fixed the mass in the E plus E minus data, and then see what mass should I use in the tau channel to get the same result? So this is an isospin breaking effect. So what we get is an isospin shift by about 3 MeV, which is similar to the one you know from as a mass difference between pi plus and pi zero, which is of the same order. There are theoretical arguments. They say that this mass ratio scales like the inverse of the raw mass, and this was a theoretical prejudice. I do not understand this at all. This is impossible in my opinion. They take the Cunningham formula, you know, they apply it for the pi, this makes a very good prediction, and then they apply it to the raw, and they say the shift in the mass square should be in first approximation the same. Then you get this scaling law, which looks to me completely outside any discussion. So I think this is based on an assumption which easily could be wrong. So in our opinion, it is just an isospin breaking effect. I showed you the mass and the width difference. This accounts fully for this 10% effect and makes the A mu agree if you do an isospin correction to the tau data. Now the problem is, if you want to use the tau data, you have to know what shift you have to apply, and this you only know by comparing the data. So somehow the tau data cannot be used because you do not know how to correct it for a priori. If you don't like the idea, I would just point out that the derivative of R mu with respect to rho or the width is a really large quantity. If you do not exactly know what you're doing, then you can easily get large deviations. So my conclusion is that the tau data have an isospin breaking problem which is not completely under control, and we have to rely more on the E plus E minus data. Now the point why did we write this paper is very simple. The Chloe experiment from Daphne measured this cross section. They will come out with a final answer in a few months. They completely agree with the Novosibirsk data. It's a completely different experiment. It's a radiative return experiment. They have a 4 pi detector with almost 100% acceptance, completely different from the Novosibirsk stuff. And they can never get a 10% difference. It's even so that the Novosibirsk people had an error in the radiative corrections in the normalization, in the vacuum polarization of the BABA, and at the Aachen EPS meeting, the Chloe group was reporting a 2% higher value for the cross-section, and 2 months later the Novosibirsk group corrected their value up by 2%. So there is a very nice agreement between the E plus E minus experiments, and there is a very nice agreement between the tau, Aleph, and Chloe experiment. Cleo. So I think this might be physics, not just experimental problems. This is my suggestion. This would mean that let me come to the conclusion then. There has been this new A mu minus measurement, which is in very good agreement with the A mu plus value in accordance with CPT. You can combine it. It gives a very precise value now, which is not far from the original goal. The increasing precision required and triggered a lot of new efforts to understand and or settle the observed discrepancy, which was always at the level at most 3 sigmas, not very much, but smoking gun, or I don't know, depends on what you think. Still, a big challenge is both on the experimental side, the measurement of more precise measurement of in plus and minus cross sections on the one side. On the theory side, lattice could come into play here. There are already two calculations. Of course, they are far from reaching the precision we have from the experimental data at the moment. This going to higher and higher precision showed a lot of new obstacles. At many places, the radiative corrections on the experimental data you use had to be reconsidered many times, and here and there, and the sign error here and there, you know. I mean, the theory had to work hard, and things moved forth and back, and even now the QED part is under discussion. Somehow this remembers to the situation when the CERN experiment worked at 25 years ago. There was an error in the sign of the light by light, of the leptonic light by light, which is a huge contribution. It was completely wrong. And after the experiments, the theoreticians, Fairley himself, he looked for some theoretician to help him. They found the error. I think the E plus E minus database, I don't know, understand what I wrote here. Anyway, is more directly related to the evaluation of a mu hadron, and therefore gives a more reliable estimate in my, here you have to understand better the isospin breakings. My conservative estimate is this, so it means 2. Sigma. It's still an exciting situation. There is room for new physics. It's a serious challenge for theory and experiments. We need better E plus E minus data. Chloe will finalizing their measurement soon. Similar experiments come from the B factories. Ongoing upper gates are done at Novosibirsk and Beijing. There is the Tau charm factory. They will do very important measures here. This is very important for the evaluation of the hadronic alpha contribution. Then there are a lot of theoretical issues. I don't go into detail. If you have a look at you can do a low energy theory of the pion form factor and improve that. There is still a challenge in the hadronic light by light scattering. We will hear about that in a minute. And so on. I think it's especially in with respect to the alpha QED and the GigaZ option, there is a big experimental challenge to attempt to measure all the cross sections at the 1% level up to the JPSI. This one has to tell the people over and over again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Presumably, it will be a while before the lattice can actually calculate the dispersion integral, but how about something like the shift, the rho plus rho minus shift, which enters into the tau data? That's something which...
Oh, this is very difficult. An unstable particle, you know, you can investigate lattice only in the Euclidean region, and there is a paper by Martin Luscher which explains how to extract mass and bits of an unstable resonance like the rho. It's very complicated, and we are pretty far away from being able to do that. I think with the next generation, with 10 teraflop machines, we will come much closer to be able to study. But you see, if it's electromagnetic effects, then it's not only QCD. You have to simulate QCD plus QED effects, you know.
No, you have to calculate
it's the QED binding energy, which for one charge is attractive, for the other charge is repulsive, and this can give a large contribution. For the pi, at least, this is so.
You don't need to simulate the lattice, you have to pi plus pi minus.
No, you have to have QED corrections on top, QED corrections on top of QCD. That's the Q, it's a QED effect, right? It's an isospin breaking effect.
Fred, I have a question about your comment shifting the mass in the tau versus the, sorry, the mass of the rho in E plus E minus versus the tau. Does that fix the problem completely? I seem to remember, I'm not quite sure, that Davier claims that a residual normalization shift of 3% remains after you have done the individual fits of the masses.
Yeah, of course.
Is my
absolutely. I mean.
So the mass shift does not fix.
I don't claim that there are no. Nobody claims that there are not also some experimental problems. First and secondly, I told you you have to use the Gunari-Sakurai formula with two or three additional resonances: the omega, the rho prime, the rho omega. And in principle, there is also a continuum, which nobody, everybody assumes a sum over resonances without continuum.
Sure.
And this is a parametrization. You have seven parameters. If you have the major effect from changing two parameters, of course you can easily accommodate the rest by changing the other parameters. If you fit the same, this two cross sections with the same formula, then it means that you have just to use different set of parameters, and these parameter changes can be declared to be the isospin breakings.
Sure. But you said
at that level it's
you gave the impression that by shifting the rho masses you fix the problem, and I just seem to remember that the 3% normalization shift remains, which perhaps you can, you can just say it's different, that's the same statement.
No, the leading effect, you get from the 10%, you get 10 or more percent, you get down to the 3% level, which is the major part, by just changing two of seven parameters. Also, the raw zero prime and the raw plus prime and things like that, they suffer from isospin breakings. But the background is also has also isospin breaking effects, no doubt. Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, the integral, of course, you change the integral. The integral agrees within half a sigma. The funny, I could tell more, because it's what is very strange is if you shift down the rho mass, and because there is a 1 over E squared enhancement, you in fact would expect that you enhance the integral instead of decreasing it, what you should. But at the same time, the width goes up. And this overcompensates, in fact, and the integral then goes down. So it's a complicated, very interesting kind of effect.
Yes, well, let's assume that there is this 2.7 sigma, or whatever, you know, with E plus and minus beta. What are the masses of the supersymmetric partner? It must be probably very low. You know, there
it's
is...
It's 100 to 500 GeV.
Oh, 500. Okay.
If you assume beta to be between 4 and 40, then it's in the range of 100 to 500 GeV, something like that.
And this has not been excluded experimentally?
No. Fortunately not.
That There are different particles entering into the loops. The Higgs masses cost require, for example, heavy stop quarks, and they are not involved in one loop correction. So there's not a type here.
So thanks, Fred, again. Thank you. The next